I'm giving you the concepts. You yourselves on your own can read the text. I'm just going through and highlighting different concepts. In beginning of chapter 5, he brings out that for simplicity's sake, we've been talking about these two different attributes of Hashem, of kindness being revelation and strictness being concealment. But we know that Hashem has other attributes as well. Just like we said that this attribute of revelation and the other one of concealment, really, they combine with each other, and they're really one thing. It's like two different sides of the same coin. We can bring in more of Hashem's attributes, and we can explain how those also combine and become all one together. And this is the meaning when we say that the Lord our God, the Lord is one. That even though we perceive different attributes of how he interacts with the creation, but in the source of it, really, it's all one. And even when it's actually acting in the creation, it still is really all one. It's just that we perceive it from different perspectives. So we think that there are differences. So one aspect in this creative process of making human beings on the earth, the sages say that originally it arose in Hashem's thought to create the world through the attribute of stern judgment, meaning the attribute of tzimtzum, concealment, and gevura, power. Meaning that Hashem would provide all the creative power needed to make the creation and make man upon it, and he would even give Adam and Chava, the human beings, commandments to do. And then he would just apply his attribute of concealment, and he would totally hide himself, and there'd be no revelation of God, and he would see how human beings can manage. But what Hashem knew is that human beings would not be able to survive in such a situation. In other words, that once Hashem would be totally concealed from them, they would forget that they had those commandments in the beginning, and they would just go after their own desires and their own wants. And that's similar to what happened before the time of Noah. But even then, God was giving them tremendous blessings, but they chose to ignore those blessings that God was giving them and just to ignore the fact that God was there. And they totally went after all their own desires and their own evil ways. So you can imagine how much worse it would have been if he would have totally concealed himself. It would have been a much worse situation. So what Hashem does is he reveals himself a little bit into the creation. Like we said, that even in nature, if you look carefully, you can perceive God in nature. And even now, with modern science, they're discovering how living processes and all the things in the human body and all the characteristics of any created thing, it is so complex and so detailed. And with every single process, depending on other processes that are indispensable, that one could not exist without the other, and it's all working in a perfect harmony, it could only have been made that way. It could not have randomly happened or even progressively happened. And when we see that, now we can see that there's a higher intelligence and a higher design behind everything. We just have to open our minds and accept the fact that tells us that there's a God, there's a creator. So the fact that Hashem made things that way is something that he extended his mercy to human beings to be able to perceive him in the creation. And it's not just that we can see things physically, but we also have emotions. He gave us a soul that we can have actual feeling of being in communication and being connected with Hashem. And also, Hashem reveals himself through prophets, that he actually speaks to us. So, because Hashem is speaking to us through the prophets, we know he's there. He's not hiding himself totally from us. And that's a thing of God's mercy. And that is an attribute that we refer to that in Hebrew as Tiferes. If you would look at it as a literal translation, it means beauty. Why is it called beauty? Because if you talk about something like beautiful colors, in order to be a beautiful color, it has to be some combination of basic colors. A basic color by itself is not beautiful. It's only when you make it into combination with others and with contrasts and hues and things like this that you bring out something that's beautiful. So that's the power of Hashem to combine different things together. And this combination of his kindness with his limitation, when that happens, we refer to that as being this attribute of beauty or tiferes, and we also call it by another name, which is mercy. We can't describe these things all with just one word. We have to have a lot of different words to describe one thing because it has a lot of depth in the concept. So when we say that Hashem knew he had to apply his attribute of mercy in order for the human beings to be able to be successful in the world, the sages say that it refers to a few things. It refers to miracles happening, that we see that Hashem reveals himself with some miracle that happens that supersedes nature. Then we have also prophecy, that Hashem reveals himself through the prophets. And he also gave us the instructions in the Torah of how to know if a prophet is true or not. Even giving us that information, that's another thing that's merciful, because if we couldn't have any way of knowing if a prophet is true or not, then we would really be in a difficult situation. So, mercifully, Hashem gave us the instruction manual that we can tell the difference. And the other thing it mentions is he put tzaddikim into the world, meaning righteous people who are connected with God on a higher level than normal people are. And because they're more connected with God and their whole life is just about godliness. And you can see how the tzaddik is in the world, but it's like something that's coming from a higher level. And the advice he gives in the Torah he teaches, and even when he prays, the miracle will happen that he's praying for. Like all the righteous people that are mentioned in the Torah, Noah and Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Rivka, Jacob, Joseph, all these great tzaddikim that we read about in the Torah, and after the Torah, in every generation, we have tzaddikim. So they are there also to let us know that we're not abandoned, that God is with us, and they're there to share the godliness with us. So the thing about these tzaddikim is that their souls are on a very high level, meaning that the soul of a person is a spiritual thing that's created in a spiritual realm at a certain level. And it has to come down through a process of going down to lower and lower and lower and lower levels until eventually the soul will come into the body, into the physical world. And it's not going to anymore be in the spiritual world for 120 years. And then when the person passes away, the soul will leave the body and will go back up to the spiritual worlds. So the spiritual worlds, also we know they're on different levels. We say a higher spiritual world is more holy. A lower spiritual world is less holy. So when a soul is coming down through these levels to come into the physical world, it's affected by the levels that it passes through. It will take on characteristics or perceptions of how it is in that particular world. So if a soul comes down level by level, all the way through the very lowest level, and then it comes into the body, that soul is coming in with a low perspective because it's influenced by the last station that it was at. If it's coming down from the lowest station, it's very difficult for that soul to appreciate or perceive godliness. On the other hand, there could be a soul which is from a very high level that Hashem will send it straight down into the body, jumping past all those intermediate levels. So the soul itself still is in the state of being in that very, very high level where godliness is totally revealed, and Hashem plucks it from there and puts it into the body. And it's not affected by all those intermediate levels. So if it wants to connect with Hashem, it can just connect straight to Hashem because it's going straight to its source, which it's still connected to. So that is the situation with these great tzaddikim. These are the types of souls that they have. And he brings an example, like the soul of Moses and the patriarchs. And also Noah himself was also one of these very high level of souls. And the different things, like the tzaddikim, and the miracles that happen, and the prophecies, they're all things that are coming down. They happen in the physical world, where you have the creation and also the limitation. So it's all a combination of these forces. Then he goes on to talk about the other attributes that are processes in Hashem's creation, which correspond to the other of those seven names of Hashem. There's an attribute in Hebrew we call it Netzach, which means either being victorious or being eternal. And the attribute of Hod, which means to be splendorous, but it refers also to humility. And Yesod is an attribute of connection, of connecting something from a higher level to a lower level. But these other attributes we're talking about here are really like offshoots of the basic attributes of kindness, strictness, and mercy. Then those are the fundamental attributes. And then there's also a lower level of those attributes, which come down to all combine into what we call Hashem's attribute of kingship. which at the point where we have Hashem's kingship, that's where there's already going to be a creation coming out that Hashem can be a king over that creation. And the king, through giving his commands to the creation, combines all these different attributes and creative abilities that things should happen, that should come out the way he wants, and that his will should be expressed. And a little more Kabbalah things here, which is that when we talk about the reward for the souls in their afterlife, when they go back up to the heavens, what is their reward that they get in the heavens? It's basically that the soul is a spiritual thing. The soul is not interested in, like some religions will say, oh, we're going to have a lot of good food, we're going to have a good rest, the men are going to have a lot of good women. That's their idea of their spiritual paradise. But in reality, all of those things are just physical trappings, and the soul itself is not interested in. Those are things that the body is interested in. The soul itself is spiritual, and the soul itself wants to have an experience of godliness. So what the reward for the soul in the spiritual realm is that it gets to experience godliness. And the highest faculty of a human being is his faculty of knowledge and understanding. And that comes from the soul. So the soul itself, the most pleasurable thing you can have is an understanding and appreciation of godliness. So in the spiritual realm, Hashem reveals and allows the souls an appreciation and a comprehension of this process that we're talking about. And that experience is an extreme pleasure for the souls, even though it's limited, but it's much more than the soul can comprehend when it's in a physical body. Also, what is being revealed to give the souls the knowledge of Hashem? Hashem gives them an understanding of the Torah as it is in its spiritual aspect, not in its physical aspect of stories and commandments and do this and do that, but on a higher level where it's the actual wisdom of Hashem, and it's the combination of God's attributes, because you have some commandments are commandments of things that you should do, good deeds that you should do. That's coming from Hashem's attribute of kindness. There's also commandments of things you should not do. That's coming from Hashem's attribute of strictness. So there's this expression in the end of the Torah, right before Moshe passes away, on the 7th of Adar. When Moses was giving his last address to the Israelites in describing the greatness of the giving of the Torah, he said, from God's right hand, he gave them a fiery law. So the analogy of kindness is with the right hand. Because you give someone a gift, you give with the right hand. And the idea of strictness is the left hand, like you're pushing someone away. And also the right hand is stronger. So you have more power in your right hand. And the left hand is more limited. So it's like a power of limitation. We're talking on the average for people who are right-handed. If someone is left-handed, we say he has his right hand on his left side. The right represents the attribute of kindness. And when Moses described the Torah as a fiery law, fire is also a symbol for strictness and severity, whereas the symbol for the kindness is water that makes things grow and it comes down, whereas the attribute of fire is to leave. They have both these things, the kindness and the strictness. In the spiritual realms, the souls receive the Torah not only as we perceive it as relating to physical things, they perceive the Torah as it is on a higher level, which Torah is an expression of God's divine attributes. So now he's talking about a disagreement that arose among the Torah sages in the later generations. Because this process that we're talking about here in this lesson in Chassidus, this is really an explanation of the Kabbalah of the Arizal, Rabbi Yitzhak Luria, who was one of the great early Kabbalists. And it wasn't that he came up with these ideas on his own so much. This is really Torah from Moses on Mount Sinai. The Kabbalah also was revealed to Moses, but the learning of it was concealed, and it was only among select few of the sages. And it was taught in a very hidden way until after the destruction of the temple, there was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who was a student of Rabbi Akiva, and he actually revealed the book of Zohar, right before he died. He spoke it over and his students recorded. And that was one of the first books of Kabbalah that were revealed from these earlier hidden teachings. And within the Zohar, it includes also works of earlier Kabbalah, even going back to Abraham. That's called the book of Sefer Yetzirah, the book of creation. But even at that time, it was still very limited in who was learning it and what they could teach from it. Until the time of the Arizal, said hundreds of years ago that now that we're coming closer and closer to the time of Mashiach coming, when all of these things are going to be much more revealed, and we're going to be learning Torah on those very high mystical levels. So now it becomes a actual obligation not to hide these ideas, but to actually bring out the ideas and explain them. So the Arizal expounded this whole idea of the Tzimtzum, the process of contracting and concealing God's infinite creative power in order to bring out the different levels and different things in creation. And he explained it in a much, much more detailed, exact way than what we're doing here. We're just going over basic concepts. But he explained the whole process in a very detailed way, which his disciple is the one who recorded his teachings in the books of Kabbalah. And these books were studied, but again, it was still very deep teaching, so a person had to really develop to be a very high-level scholar and a very serious person in order to delve into this. But among those who did, after the passing of the Arizal, after several generations, there became a disagreement about what his teachings meant. So there was one camp, so to speak, who said that what the Tzimtzum means is that God actually removed himself from the creation. That the creation is like the light going out from the sun. And we already went through all the whole argument how that can't be, but it seemed to them logical. They said that here in this world, there's things that are just not good. There's evil in this world, there's impurity, there's filth, all kinds of nasty stuff in this world. And how can you say that the holiness of God can actually be in such a place? How can you say that the holy light of God is in such a place? It must be that when you talk about a contraction, it means he contracted the light back into his essence, and now you just have the creation, and God from a distance is providing all the workings of what's going to happen in the world. That was the idea of the Vilna Gaon. He had that idea. Whereas the Baal Shem Tov, the Maggid of Mezrich and the Alter Rebbe, the way they understood the teaching of the Arizal, they actually explained how you can't say that God removed himself, then you're just saying there's something outside of God. Then you're putting a limitation on God, and a limitation on God in a way of spatial limitation, you're putting on him the qualities of having a body, and all of that can't be correct. Those are things that we say are against the teachings of Torah. That's the way that we explain it, and some people will say, well, maybe the Vilna Gaon didn't really mean what he said literally, but even so, other people after him took what he said literally, so he had this splitting of the observant Jews in Europe and Russia into those that would say they were misnagdim, which means they were against. They were against the teachings of the Alter Rebbe. And there were the Hasidim, it means the pious ones, who were following the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov and the Alter Rebbe, which goes back to an interpretation, basically, of these Kabbalistic concepts. So the Alter Rebbe tried very hard to meet with the Vilna Gaon to sit down and explain how to correctly understand these things. And it's said that the Alter Rebbe would have been able to meet with the Vilna Gaon, and they would be able to come to a common understanding that the Mashiach would have come at that point. But unfortunately, there were people who blocked that from happening. But nowadays, though, the whole world has come to the same understanding as the Alter Rebbe, that you have to say the Hashem is really everywhere, and the whole creation is within Hashem. And when we say they're misnagdim, it's for other reasons, because people have pretty much reconciled on this, except for a few stubborn holdouts. That it's just a matter of stubbornness. It's not a matter of that they really have a real reasoning behind continuing this pointless argument. So then he goes through a discussion more in detail about the idea of the mercy of Hashem revealing himself in the creation through these different means of the tzaddikim and the miracles and the prophecies and so on. So he used these examples to explain how this attribute of mercy works in combination with the creative power and the limitation power to bring out the world as we know it. But the Alter Rebbe specifically focused on the miracles that are recorded in the Torah. We know that there's miracles that happen in the world, for sure. Most people have experienced some miracles. If they don't know it, or they do realize it, that things happen that were beyond nature for them. But it's like small miracles. There's books that are written called, by a title, Small Miracles. After the biblical times, we have not seen things happening like the splitting of the sea, or like when Joshua prayed for the sun and the moon to stand still for a whole day, and the man, the food coming from heaven. So we read about them in the Torah. The Torah records those things. And of course, just like everything else in Torah, those things happened to the ancestors of the Jewish people, or even there were other nations that witnessed miracles that God did. Obviously, the Egyptians witnessed the splitting of the sea. So we have the tradition of it. But what is the benefit to us if we're not experiencing them now? We will at some point when Mashiach comes in the future, the Messianic era. But at this point, we don't seem to have them. So what is the benefit of having them that they are recorded in the Torah? The question is that the world, as we said, is created through God's speech. That is the divine energy working through the attributes, and the attributes combining in different ways to produce different types of creations. When they come down into this world, everything's operating in a certain way. In other words, you have God's creative power working through the letters creation to produce a world that looks like a world of nature. If the world is created on that level, how can it be that some miracle can happen which will come from a higher level, even higher than those letters that the world is being created from? Why wouldn't that just nullify the creation? How can the world still exist when God has nullified some physical properties of the world? That's where he brings out that that is a sign of God's mercy, that he allows the miracles to come in such a way, which is a not understandable way, that a miracle from beyond nature can come in to the world and not nullify the world. And that's an aspect of Hashem allowing himself to be revealed, but still in a limited way. Still, it seems like we still have the original question. In detail, how can you say that this miracle can happen and it won't nullify the world? That's the point of it being recorded in the Torah. How does that explain things? Because we know that the Torah existed before creation. The Torah is God's wisdom. God had a whole plan for the creation of the world, and he did it according to his wisdom, which is the Torah. So it says God looked into the Torah, and he created the world. What did God look into? God looked into the Torah, and in the Torah, according to God's wisdom, there would be a certain time when the Israelites would come to the sea, chased by the Egyptians, and the sea would split. They would go through on dry land, and would come back and would drown the Egyptians. So God created the world in such a way that the nature of the world is that at that point in time, the sea would split. So it's not something that is against the nature of the world. God built the nature of the world that it contains miracles. And the miracles it contains are specifically those that are written in the Torah. So that is why the miracle doesn't nullify the world, because that miracle is coded in, like it's programmed into the world. At that time, God already decided he's going to step in and make that in the world. And it is recorded there in the Torah. That is what shows us that the world is created by God. The world had to be created by God from the very beginning in order that there should be these types of miracles. It proves it can't be that there was some random Big Bang and the stars coalesced and there was dust that combined and it made a solar system, and then there were some molecules that came together with the radiation and the heat and so on. They randomly became some kind of a soup and started combining and they became a living organism and eventually it evolved into human beings, all by randomness. And then in this process, human beings evolved from monkeys, And it came out that there were some Israelites in Egypt, and they came out and they needed help, so God split the sea for them. So if the world had come about randomly without the design from Hashem, if Hashem would step in and do such a miracle, it would nullify the existence of the world. Because the world is only a natural thing, and here you're bringing in a total godly power. But what it's teaching is that no, that the world itself is a godly power that's created by God, and he did it in such a way that he designed in the beginning and the condition that he will do these miracles at those times. As part of Torah, meaning as part of his design of his plan for the creation. The difference of the miracles recorded in the Torah and the miracles that are happening nowadays is that the miracle happens, but if someone wants to convince himself it wasn't really a miracle, it just was a coincidence, or some different things came together just by luck and so on, so a person can convince himself or argue against it being an open miracle. Whereas in those other cases, you know, arguing, people now say, oh, maybe there was an earthquake and it shook the water or something. Maybe a comet came by, and because of the gravity of the comet, all those things are too absurd coincidences to even consider to be a possibility. But that's the reason that that's the case now, because for a few thousand years, we're in this state of spiritual exile where God is hidden from us. There were open miracles all the way up through the time of Solomon. When he built the temple, there were open miracles happening every single day in the temple. And if you wanted to see an open miracle that was totally transcending nature, you could go to the temple and you could see that happening. For example, the fire on the altar descended from heaven. And it's a whole list of other miracles that happened there. But that was only in the first temple. After it was destroyed and the Jews were exiled to Babylon, it says that the divine presence also exiled itself from being openly revealed. So that began a period of spiritual exile. And even when the Jews came back from Babylon and they built the second temple did not have the miracles of the first temple. Another miracle, we're reading now in the Torah portion for this week about the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. One of the things in the time of Moses they made was the breastplate that had the 12 stones for the 12 tribes, and they were inscribed with the letters of the names of the tribes. And inside the breastplate was a parchment that had the name of God written out inside it. And there was a miracle that happened that if there would be a need to get a prophetic message from Hashem, there was something of a national need that the Jewish people had. Well, the Kohen Gadol was wearing this breastplate. The letters that were engraved would actually light up with the letters of the answer. And then the Kohen Gadol would see the letters, and prophetically he'd be able to put them in the right order to be the answer that Hashem was giving. That's another total open miracle. But after the destruction of the first temple, we didn't have that miracle anymore. It won't be again until the third temple that those types of miracles will happen again. Even in the Tanakh, by the time you get to the story of Purim, you can read the book of Esther, there's a very big miracle that Haman was defeated and the decree of the destruction of the Jews was overturned. You read all the details of the process that happened, but nothing was coincidental. It was all part of a plan. But at each point, you couldn't know in the middle of the story what's going to happen. And also, a person could read it as a skeptic and say, no, it was just a lucky coincidence and so on that all that happened. That Esther became queen just when she was needed to save the Jewish people. And the king had a dream at a certain time when he would wake up and look into the book of records and he would see the story of Mordecai and he would then turn against Haman. The book of Esther is the last book that was canonized in the Tanakh to tell us now we're going from the time of open miracles into the time of concealed miracles.